What you're hearing right now is the beginning of Aaron Copland's Appalachian Spring, performed here by the Boston Symphony Orchestra and the London Symphony Orchestra. The piece first premiered with an accompanying ballet performance in 1944 and was considered a tremendous success. The late music and drama critic Terry Teachout, for example, said, "Probably the greatest piece of classical music composed by an American. Certainly the greatest dance score composed by an American, completely comparable in quality to the great ballets of Tchaikovsky or Stravinsky. All that is best about mid-century American music in this piece. But what is it that truly makes it great?" Musician, author, and composer Rob Capello has made a career out of answering that question, and he was in town this weekend to highlight some of Aaron Copland's best work. He caught up with Radio Boston host Tiziana Deering before the concert, and the two talked about Appalachian Spring, starting with when Rob first discovered it as a 12-year-old child.
Yeah, it's true. You know, it's sort of an embarrassing personal story. But when I was 12 years old, Appalachian Spring was like one of my favorite pieces of music. Though I played several instruments as a teenager, I didn't really know anything about classical music, or certainly anything about Aaron Copland, but I absolutely loved Appalachian Spring. There was this old recording, which is the one you were just hearing. There was this old recording with Copland conducting the London Symphony Orchestra, and I used to listen to it almost every day. And on these particularly beautiful days, the sun would stream through my window, and I would imagine this wonderful Appalachian composer, Aaron Copland, sitting in a rocking chair on the front porch of his log cabin, gazing out at the Appalachian countryside in front of him and filtering the beauties of nature into his piece, Appalachian Spring. However, when I was 16, I was horrified to find out that not only was Copland not from Appalachia, he was in fact a Jew from Brooklyn. And in fact, not only that, but Appalachian Spring wasn't even the name of the piece when Copland wrote it. It was named the day before the premiere by the choreographer, Martha Graham, and Copland had no idea it was even about Appalachian Spring when he was writing it.
Okay, but I gotta stop you for, wait, just a second. So also Martha Graham? So Copland makes this piece and Martha Graham choreographed it?
Yeah, in fact, it was written for Martha Graham. And in fact, the title that Copland thought he was writing was Ballet for Martha. Huh. That was it. He had no idea. It was completely a commission from Martha Graham. And she was the one who actually gave it the name Appalachian Spring. But even when it was named Appalachian Spring, it still had nothing to do with Appalachia or spring. That was simply a line from a poem by Hart Crane that Martha Graham liked and thought it might make a good title. So it still had Appalachian Spring having nothing to do with Appalachia or spring, and Copland knowing nothing about it. But the thing that's so wonderful about it is Copland says, "I wasn't the only one who got this wrong." There's a great quote from him. He says, quote, "I have been amused that people so often have come up to me to say, when I listen to that ballet of yours, I can just feel spring and see the Appalachians. But when I wrote the music, I had no idea what Martha was going to call it. Even after people learn that I didn't know the ballet title when I wrote the music, they still tell me they see the Appalachians and feel spring." I'm willing if they are.
That's so funny. So I first encountered it. I marched in the marching band at the University of Michigan, and we did a medley from it for a halftime show. And of course, being in the Midwest, I fully embraced the idea of sweeping farmlands and mountain landscapes. And, you know,
absolutely.
So it is stunning that that's not the case. And yet it is great, right? I mean, this spoke to me immediately. So Rob, we're going to dive into some of the music now. And one of the things that was interesting to me is you wanted to make sure that as we were doing that, we were looking at a particular form of performance of the music, which was with a pretty small ensemble, because apparently how many instruments there were kind of matters in this case.
Yeah, it was originally only written for 13 players because that's all they could fit in the room. But immediately the next year, once the piece was so popular, an orchestral version, a suite was created, removing about 10 minutes of the music, and it was for full orchestra. And for years, that's the only version anyone knew, because that's all anyone played. It wasn't until 1972 that the original version, the 13 instruments, was created to match the suite, the shorter version. So it wasn't until 1972 that anyone could hear the version that we're going to perform, which is the original 13-instrument version reduced by 10 minutes into a suite.
Almost
that's
30
a lot
years
of information
later.
There.
That's a lot. Yeah,
yeah, but it's much, much later. And no one knows that version. The only version anyone knows is the one that I heard when I was 12, which is beautiful for the the full orchestra, but we're going to be doing the original 13-instrument version.
So take us into the beginning there.
Yeah. You know, in interviews, Copland often talked about a French word, a trouvaille, a find, something that you stumble on, a kind of a compositional gift for the gods, which can become the basis of an entire piece. And Appalachian Spring is based on two of these finds, a chord, which I'm going to call the Appalachian Spring chord, and a shaker tune, 'Tis the Gift to Be Simple. Now, the Appalachian Spring chord, he discovered one day, he was just improvising at the piano, and his fingers happened upon this chord. And he kept playing this over and over again. You know, if you go to enough concerts, I'm sure you've read program notes that say things like, the entire piece grows out of this opening six-note idea. And, you know, I mean, it seems like all you need to do is write a great opening idea and then you're done. Everything effortlessly flows from that. I mean, it really sounds, I wish that were so true. But, you know, in the case of Appalachian Spring, though it wasn't effortless, it certainly is true. That chord actually is the basis of the entire piece. And I'll just get you started and show you how it works. Now, the Appalachian Spring chords actually made of the two most basic chords in all of tonal music. The simplest progression in all of tonal music, the most basic cadence, is this. Now, these two chords, what musicians call tonic and dominant, or one and five, or home and away, these are the poles of the tonal universe. They're the most fundamental key-defining chords.
They sound like church, like everything I'd hear in church.
Exactly. That's it. You've heard it a million times. But if I play the right hand alone, and just take the second chord and play it an octave higher, so instead of this, I do this, and play them at the same time.
Now it sounds like Sun on the Water.
That's it. That is the Appalachian Spring chord. Now, I can play all six notes at once. I can play them one at a time, what we call an arpeggio. So it's made of two three-note groups, what I'm going to call shaker one and shaker two. Now, I just made that up. Shaker one and shaker two. But what makes the beginning so beautiful is the way it seems to grow from nothing. You know, oftentimes Copland talked about Martha Graham's art as being seemingly, but only seemingly simple. And that's the key to Appalachian Spring. It is seemingly, but only seemingly simple. So it starts off with the simplest thing you can possibly do. Three A's. The note the orchestra tunes to. Three A's. Then the clarinet will take that same A an octave higher, opening up that space. So we've got this A. Then we open up this space. Then we add the first two remaining notes of shaker one. The cello then takes that A down low, opening up that space.
Right, like so you can feel it, like you want it to sit there.
Feel it. We are it's like a camera had started by focusing on a single point and then gradually pulled backwards to reveal the entire cadence. Then when we've got the low A, the chord unfolds for the first time. Shaker one. Shaker two. Now, what's so beautiful about this opening is it's so simple, but also so courageous. For 3.5 minutes, Copland doesn't use a single accidental, a single note outside the key. It's like all you did, it's the equivalent of using only the white keys on the piano without a single black key, like having a crayon box with only primary colors. It's this bare, stripped-down, pioneer universe. So how do you get 3 minutes out of this one chord? Well, I'll get you started, and you'll have to hear the rest of it at the concert itself. All right, so the first time you hear it one note at a time. One, two, three, four, five, six. Well, the next thing he discovers is, what if I overlap those two groups and play the second one starting on the last note of the first one. So you get one exquisite moment of overlap. Instead of this, now you get this. One, two, overlap.
So shaker one bumps into shaker two.
Exactly. Shaker one bumps into shaker two. And then the flute and the clarinet simply takes notes out of the Appalachian spring chord and create little melodies above it, while the piano opens up the lower space.
Bum.
That fantastic note, that is the lowest note on the piano. So we've had this A, we've had this A, we've had this A. Now we open up this A. Shaker one overlaps shaker two. Clarinet and flute play melodies above.
You know, every note you play makes me feel so calm.
Yeah, it is so serene because it has the courage of sticking with this incredible simplicity. Not a single accidental, one chord. What do you do from here? Well, what do? You take that chord and you transpose it. For non-musicians, that simply means taking the idea but starting it on another note. So if we call this, and again, these are my terms I made up, shaker home, then we can transpose it and do shaker away.
Oh,
so now
way.
We've got two different versions. Now, for 10 measures, this is why you're so calm and serene. The accompaniment does nothing but alternate and rock gently back and forth between shaker home
like
and shaker away
in,
different combinations. Here is just the accompaniment. Shaker away. Each note separate. Overlap them. Shaker away. Overlap. Shaker home. Shaker away. Shaker home.
I knew there was a reason I loved this music.
Just sitting and rocking back and forth between these two beautiful chords. Now, here's also what makes it so special. On top of this, we get a beautiful new melody in a distinctive new signature Copland orchestration. Normally, when a flute and a violin play a melody together, the standard way to orchestrate that is to have the flute play the same notes as the violin, but an octave higher. So if the melody is here in the violin, the normal thing to do is have the flute up here doing it an octave higher. However, Copland does the exact opposite. He puts the violin an octave above the flute, which makes this simple melody sound unbelievably poignant, yet not sentimental. All right, now you're ready to hear that whole opening segment, beginning from nothing, from three notes, opening up this A, opening up this A, the opening shaker home chord by itself, the overlap version, the transpositions. Here's a whole opening of like a minute and a half of music using nothing but this one Appalachian spring chord. The three A's. Clarinet above. Cello. Shaker one. Shaker two. Low piano, lowest A. Overlap. Melody in clarinet and flute. Transpose. Shaker away. Flute and violin. Violin an octave higher than the flute. Nowhere to go. Isn't that an incredibly beautiful
it's incredible.
Opening?
And I feel like I'm meditating, right? I feel like,
yeah.
I, you know, again, I don't know if it's my Midwest roots or your power of suggestion from earlier, but I feel like I'm sitting on a rocker on a big porch and just staring out at a gorgeous landscape.
And what's amazing is the courage to write that kind of music. Now remember, this is 1944. This won the Pulitzer Prize in 1945, and one of its principal competitors was Arnold Schoenberg's Ode to Napoleon. Classical music was writing some of the most dissonant, complex, atonal music that anyone else was writing. And the courage to write this kind of music, two tonal chords, back and forth while the most complicated music was being written everywhere else. Truly an extraordinary moment.
That was Rob Capello, musician, author, and composer, talking with Tiziana Deering about what makes Aaron Copland's Appalachian Spring great.